Welcome to Drunk on Comics, episode 194. Lynn's here with Derek and Tony. We talked today a little bit about Derek and I's love for the new Batman vs. Superman movie.
Yeah, that's one word for it.
Got into a large discussion over the first four issues of Klaus. It was pretty awesome.
We paired X-Men 92 number one with a fantastic 90s alcohol that we all love to hate. Zima!
And we got into Warner Brothers doing some reshoots on Suicide Squad and why in the fuck they would even want to do that. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Drunk on Comics, episode 194. I literally can't even. Seems fitting.
Multipass.
You haven't even opened this yet. You're a winner. You haven't even opened it. You got a free multipass, Tony.
Multipass.
It's not. That doesn't look anything like you, though.
Well, see me when I do myself up.
Yeah? Do you have one of those awesome yellow, I don't even know what to call that thing that she wears, bondage suit?
the wearing nothing.
Yeah. The yellow straps that she wears in that movie.
But there are some people that can cosplay that, and very few that can cosplay that look good.
Yeah.
Saw a dude cosplay it once.
Oh my god. Were his balls hanging out?
Yeah.
Awkward!
I feel like the ratio of balls at cons is exponentially growing. Like, visual balls, not... Obviously, there's always a lot more
balls.
Jimmy's
interviewing David C. Hayes today.
Oh!
Fucker!
Did he already announce that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was say, because we are recording right now, so.
Well, everyone knows now.
Everyone knows now.
Dude, he's funny, though.
Yeah. I know. There's so much information I gleaned from him about fetishes.
I know. And, yeah. Oh, my God. Such an awesome conversation that didn't actually record.
So I've missed you guys. It's been 2 weeks since I've seen you.
Well,
you know,
what
you been up to?
Easter and all that.
Yeah.
I didn't really miss you, so it's awkward now.
Fuck you. You did too.
I did. I did miss you guys. Spend the time with the family compared to being here recording with you.
Family probably smelled better.
No, there's been a lot that has happened in the last 2 weeks. Pretty much. I've been dead from life. Been going out a lot more than I should, and last night I actually stayed in.
Oh.
That's crazy.
I know, I'm adulting.
You've been adulting pretty hard lately.
I also stayed in last night. Friday night, though, I played Settlers of Catan and drank like half a bottle of whiskey, and sweet Jesus was I hungover yesterday
morning.
Yeah?
How does one drunkenly play Settlers of Catan?
Not well.
Yeah.
Everyone, the problem, we random generated the board.
That's the reason why I lose all the time. I'm drunk when I play the game.
We random generated the board. So the only thing that anyone ever rolled was sheep. So everyone had like 8 sheep in their hand and nothing else. We just have to throw sheep away. Like it was like sheep famine every time someone rolled a 7.
Mm.
It was terrible. But nothing else got rolled. So it was like a 3-hour game of Settlers that should not have taken that long.
Right.
It was painful.
Sheep based.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, there was also what used to be my favorite day of the year.
Oh, you did. I heard you had a sad April Fool's Day this year.
I was fucking depressed. I didn't do jack shit. I did one small thing, which was I have a good friend who they found out they were pregnant earlier in the year. And they will eventually get married, but I just posted, congrats, I can't believe, you know, Aaron proposed to you. And she didn't see it all day. He saw it and thought it was kind of funny. Some other people were like, what, congrats? She goes, oh my god, thanks, Tony. You could be my maid of honor. Literally does she know that I take things literally. And when I saw her later on Friday night, joking about, you know, you're really the only thing that I did today, and it wasn't even that great, and like, oh, I'm going to drink some more. And then I go, but I am your maid of honor still.
That means
so I got
that
going for me.
You have to throw the bachelorette party, which I'm sure you'll probably be really good at, actually. Yeah,
Tony
and then
loves dicks.
Wear a pretty, pretty dress. You have to wear a dress.
I could do that.
Yes.
I think I saw an amazing April Fool's thing that happened at one of our branches to one of my really good friends. He came into work at 10 o'clock, and his desk drawer with all of his files turned into a fish tank.
Oh.
He had 30 goldfish in his desk.
That's impressive.
When he opened it. So, yeah. Huh. So now they have a branch fish tank.
Nice.
See, my greatest, I feel... Well, I've done a lot of great ones, so I can't say the greatest, but one of that's near and dear to my heart because of how many people got fooled was last year when I got engaged.
Oh, yeah.
And there are many people that don't believe me as well. They shouldn't. And it was talking to the right people, though, and telling them about the prank, saying, I know you're not going to believe us anyways, but if you're in on it, that will fool the next person saying, maybe. So I told my brother this happened, so he joined in. And it also worked because it was with a friend who has been, like, everyone thought we were secretly dating anyways. So it wasn't that put off that that could happen.
Right.
And so, yeah, it worked out great. 255 people later liking it and 100 people's comment on it. Like,
that's a pretty sizable April Fool's
show.
It was,
yeah.
There, so.
I remember
And that's
that
why
one.
I'm, like, so depressed this year. I'm like, I can't top that. I can't.
No.
I'm looking at all the other ones in the past that I've done, too, and just nothing.
No. You peaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of, like, sad. However, then one person did make me feel better. She goes, well, actually, it was old Derek, who made me feel better of, you know, the one day when Tony won't do a prank, and that's his prank for April Fool's Day, which is kind of what I did. So, therefore, the people that may have thought I pranked them, which I really didn't prank, is how I pranked, but I didn't prank. And
that's like Inception pranking.
It is.
Yeah. Prank within a prank.
But then another friend said, you know, because then it snowed here the next day, and with the, I wouldn't even say blizzard getting, with, you know, with the snowfall and everything.
Ugh,
like
disgusting.
I hate Michigan.
That's what that is.
I kept telling people.
Was that your prank? Did
yes,
you make
was,
it snow? You did a snow dance.
I have the power.
Yeah. Disgusting.
I talk to the weatherman, and he does what I say. Winter is coming. Okay.
Every year I say it's going to happen. We always have a snowstorm in April, and I was like, no, this year's been fine. That won't happen. And sure as shit, here it is.
But it couldn't have been better if it was on April Fool's Day. That would have been funny. But then again, like I said, the anti-April Fool's Day, which, you know what? I don't care about one day in April. I care about all the fools throughout April, so I still have something that maybe I could pull off.
All right. So now everybody's going to be, like, waiting. See, that's the thing, is you're going to say that you're going to prank, and then everybody's going to be really tense about it, and then you're just not going to do anything.
See, I like the subtle slow burns, the people that they don't even know they're getting pranked until...
Like you slowly poisoning somebody until...
April Fool's is the dish best served cold, Tony. You can do this like May.
Oh, well, I went and saw Kevin Smith this week, you guys.
That's pretty cool.
It was...
And you randomly got to sit next to Jimmy.
I did. And I knew he was going to be there, so I ran into him in the lobby, and I was like, where are you sitting? And he's like, B9. And I'm like, oh my god, I'm sitting in B10. How weird is that? So,
I'm sitting in BB8.
But it was awesome. I love Kevin Smith a lot.
Well, tell us some more.
A lot.
Well, how did it go?
It was good. They did. It was a Fat Man on Batman live podcast. So they talked... Well, I don't know if you guys listen to Kevin Smith's podcasts
at all,
but I would say that no matter what the source of the podcast is, whether it's Smodcast or Fat Man on Batman or any of the other ones that he does, like 50% of it is just Kevin Smith talking about himself. So it was about that. And they talked about Batman versus Superman and
That
stuff about Batman versus Superman. You want his thoughts or my thoughts?
Well, both.
Why not
start off the show right with one of the biggest flop news in history?
Yeah. Well, Kevin Smith hated it, and then he liked it. So he watched it once, and I guess he didn't hate it. He said it had no heart. But then he watched it with Jason Mewes, who is apparently the world's best fanboy because he just loves everything.
Okay.
So that made him change his mind, watching it with somebody who could just...
But do you feel like he changed his mind because, you know, Batfleck says, hey, buddy, don't diss my movie.
No, that's funny, though, because there was an article that he read that some guy wrote on, I don't even remember the website, that literally was like, oh, Kevin Smith flip-flopped. He said he didn't like it, but I bet you Warner Brothers called him and was like, listen, dude, you can't be talking shit about our movie. And Kevin Smith was like... I appreciate that people think I have that much clout in Hollywood that Warner Brothers is going to call me and be like, you're ruining our movie.
That's the one thing, though. Like, he does have so much name recognition, so much, like, lovability and everything.
Right.
Yet he can't ever get funded his projects.
No.
Okay, granted, they don't make millions and millions of dollars, but they still have cult following.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the thing, though. He has name recognition within certain groups.
Right.
Like, as a whole, I don't think he has the name recognition of, like, Coppola or, right, like, Scorsese or something. He's Kevin Smith. He makes nerd movies.
Yeah, I guess. Nerds, yeah, know him. I guess we are kind of blinded by knowing.
We are totally in his demographic, and I'm blinded by love. But my personal view of Batman vs. Superman was, it's all right.
I would give it a solid 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Wonder Woman.
I thought you were going to say 4 out of 5.
No.
4 out of 10 sounds about right.
The only thing it succeeded in doing was making me excited for a Wonder Woman movie.
Yes, Wonder Woman was amazing.
The rest of it was just brooding garbage for like 2 hours, and then there was a fight.
Yeah.
Well, what did you guys think about Harry Lex Luthor?
I did not. Actually, Lex Luthor was my least favorite part of this movie.
Yeah, I felt like they were trying to do the eccentricities of, like, Kingpin.
Right.
From Daredevil, but sucked at it.
Yeah.
He was just kind of obnoxious and weird.
And he didn't seem like any Luthor. Like, I go for greatest point of watching DC movies are their cartoon movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those are really good.
Those are amazing.
And whoever does a voice of Lex in those and, like, his just brooding and just kind of, like, arrogant, like, asshole works really well. And having right. a balded, older gentleman seems to personify that character. Having a young Mark Zuckerberg, you know,
yeah.
type person, it was not good casting at all, I feel.
Well, and so I've seen theories, which you've seen the movie, it kind of plays into the end of the movie, but that he's basically under the influence of Darkseid, and that's why he's a little loopy.
There was that deleted scene, too, where you see someone that doesn't necessarily look like Darkseid. It looks more like Steppenwolf or Darkseid's dad holding, like, all the mother boxes.
Yeah.
And then he just fades away.
Yeah. So who knows, but when I think of Lex Luthor, I mean, he became president of the United States in the comic books.
You think charismatic, like, asshole, yeah, and that weird, creepy right. guy with strange social issues.
Exactly. He was, I mean, he played Mark Zuckerberg
yes.
in The Social Network. So, and it's literally, there's just a straight line between that character and the character that he played in this movie.
What do you guys think of the dream sequences?
I thought it made it a really disjointed movie that had no flow.
They were unnecessary.
And they would just, like, randomly bomb them in there, and it would just not follow any sort of plot or anything. It's just, oh, dream sequence, here we go.
Yeah, the first one where the bats are lifting
Jesus Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, Jesus Wayne out of the well that he falls into, which is, I have a whole nother issue with the... Why did they have to retell the origin story of Batman? Who doesn't know the origin story of Batman?
Literally? Why did poor Jeffrey Dean Morgan have to be Thomas Wayne for 15 seconds?
Well, like, and what's her name? From both of them. Because the chick from The Walking Dead, it was also... Mm-hmm. God, what's her name? I'm tapping on the table, yes. Because I'm thinking. Anyway, yeah, I don't know why they had to rehash that all over again. If they would have cut it out, it would have made the movie shorter, which probably would have made it better. But the second dream sequence, though, his prophetic, futuristic dream sequence.
The nightmare.
Yeah.
Where he, the big, like, Omega symbol and all the parademons.
Yes. And Flash.
Yes. It just didn't.
So many spoilers, you guys.
Well, just here's the big thing, too, though. They didn't know who Wonder Woman is. In fact, this is more of a basis of the starting of superheroes coming out and about. Right. Randomly that they all show up with already having, like you know, suits and, like, they've already been doing their own things in this place, but Batman's never heard of them.
Right.
No one else has ever heard
and
of
them. And he's supposed to be a detective.
Was another huge problem with the movie. They just didn't really introduce other characters. They just threw them in for the sake of having them in with that whole computer stuff.
Right.
It was so dumb how they did it. Like, oh, here's Flash on a video recorder from this information we stole from Lex Luthor. Oh, here's Cyborg, some video. Oh, there's an Aquaman video from some submarine. Oh, it was just a hodgepodge, just like 5 seconds to get them both in.
hot on.
Like, there was no reason for them to be in that movie other than, oh, we better put them in so people know who they are.
So
oh.
so we can prove there's other metahumans.
Yes. Cool thing was Cyborg fusing with Mother Box, and the fact that his dad was Miles Dyson from Terminator 2. I was like, oh shit, he's making a Terminator! That's all. I think I yelled out, Miles Dyson! In the theater. There were like six people in there because we went on like a Monday night at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I went Thursday when
it opened. That the Terminator creator? Shit!
That's funny. I didn't even realize that.
I feel so bad, but also we knew this coming in. Every person saw what this movie was going to be.
Right.
And it wasn't going to live up to the hype. Now, simple things that we could all just come up and say if they would have did this and this differently, why did they do it this way? Who knows? However, it doesn't sit well with the many people that love comic book movies, except for the boner hard-on DC fans. Those are the only ones out there that are still giving it, like, praising reviews. We are, in any which way, everyone's biased on everything, mm-hmm. but real critics, people who love the medium as a whole, I feel like we are not biased in a way of just hating on something or just loving it more. We're giving a real factual thoughts on it, mm-hmm. and not great action sucker punch type of movie, ugh. But
only the last half though. The first half,
Zack Snyder is really good at making pretty like camera shots, but he's not good at any sort of plot or character development whatsoever. Yeah. I feel like every movie he's made since Walking Dead, shit has just gone downhill in that.
But that's what I'm saying though. I still hear it from people of like, well, it's not that bad, or no, look at this review. This will tell you differently, and I'm like. But are you one of those fanboys?
Right.
You're just looking to try to find one person that's going to say that's awesome.
Right.
Look at the real people that are true critics who are really unbiased, and they're all panning this movie.
Yeah.
That sits well more of what type of movie it was than the few yeah. random reviews that were good.
Well, and it's starting to, I mean, there is a lot of, every time there's a superhero movie that comes out, there's always going to be people who like it and people who hate it, unless it was Deadpool, because then everybody loved it. But this is starting like a real like shit show on the internet with the people who loved it and the people who hated it.
It's and like DC Civil War.
Yes, it is. But it really, honestly, who the fuck cares? If you like a movie, fucking like the movie. Who cares if somebody else hates it?
Yeah, well, and yeah, that's, I've liked many of movies right. that were also, you know, scored 30% on Rotten Tomato. But you have to just look at I can look at those and say, I don't agree with these people's thoughts, but I can also understand
right.
this was a big flop.
Yes.
This movie has a new world record right now going for it, but it's not as good as you guys would hope.
Yeah, it has the largest drop-off week over week for box office, yeah, which is impressive.
The $81.5 million on opening day, which also includes Thursday night's showings, it dropped by 81.2% by the next week.
Yeah.
That's not to say it's still not the number one movie this week, but that's pretty telling.
Going up against anything right
yeah,
now.
There's no. literally nothing coming out this week.
Which, mm-hmm. they remember when this was going to go head-to-head with Avengers?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of smarter, though, yeah. but they switched it. It went head-to-head with Daredevil.
It was a week after Daredevil.
Or, yeah, it was a week after
they Daredevil. They either pushed Daredevil up or they moved the movie back
think they
a
moved
week?
It back a week because it was supposed to come out at the same time.
Yeah. Which was smart.
But see, I still remember them announcing that. I don't think that was far-out news. And we look at news all the time, and I can't even remember which week we learned that, but
right.
I think it was almost like within weeks of last minute, because I was still thinking that it was coming out.
When we were at C2E2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, it didn't come out this week? Oh, it comes out next week? When did that happen?
Right.
Which is kind of funny that they were afraid to go up against a TV show.
Which is awesome.
Have you guys finished that?
I have not finished
it yet. I have
not
finished it.
I've gone through the first four episodes, and episode four was one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
I've heard many spoilers about it.
But the stairwell scene was great. Everyone's talking about it, but I don't think...
Oh, that
was the third episode.
Third episode, okay.
But yeah, I don't think that beats the hallway episode of the previous season.
The camera work in the stairwell scene, though, was so cool.
It was.
But I could still see where they did some of the cuts. Whereas the hallway scene, there are some legitimate, like...
Straight shots.
But it's all from the giant, you know, success of Birdman of doing these long, you know, scenes that if they can do it right. And I think it makes an amazing
yes.
type of cinematic footage.
I agree.
Even with knowing, you know, there's people that still think, like, oh my god, that was shot in one single take. It wasn't. It's meant to make it look like that so that you're like disbelief of holy shit, this is real. One of my favorite things talking to my brother though was in that scene as well. Yeah, Daredevil doesn't kill. Except for maybe the person that he hit from the top stairs that landed on the bottom. Broke his neck. I mean, it wasn't me that killed him. It's gravity that killed him.
Yes, there you go.
Science.
Science killed him.
But, I can't even explain to you one of the pivotal things that happens in this season. By next week, if you guys haven't watched it,
we're talking about it.
Yeah,
that's okay. It got spoiled for me at Fat Man on Batman, so we'll let Derek catch up.
Okay.
Yeah, I still am trying to power through it.
Yeah.
Can you guys catch up on Fuller House?
I finished Fuller House, yes.
Nope. Refuse. Piece of shit. Most of our listeners won't really give a shit about Fuller House.
But it made my heart, like, warm.
How rude.
Here's another thing. It goes back to kind of what we're talking about, the Batman thing. Every single person that was in that show said they made it for the fans.
Right.
And that's kind of a cop-out on many levels in any type of thing that bombs by critics. Every critic gave it scathing reviews. This is, like, terrible. You know, it's that. But to be honest, I then rewatched the original Full House episode. I'm like, wait, this legitimately is the cheesy,
stupid, oh my God,
eat 'em up, like, family love. That I'm like, which is exactly what they need some shows like. And I love Netflix for everything that they're doing, for bringing back nostalgia,
yes,
bringing back 80s and 90s, doing stuff with Marvel. Preview for Luke Cage looks awesome. I'm very hoping at some point in there, he's in a, you know, tight t-shirt and puts like a
headband.
Like, yeah, a yellow tiara headband around himself, and then all of a sudden, like, Jessica Jones goes, "You're not really wearing that to the 80s party," or something just ridiculous to, like,
that would be
why he puts, he needs to just wear that at one point in there and say how ridiculous it looks. But yeah, Netflix, awesome. Fuller House, I was surprised by.
I enjoyed it. I really did. I mean, it was super cheesy, but
I've been meaning to actually just talk about it for a minute on the air for the last couple weeks. And every time I'm like, oh shit, I forgot to work that in somehow.
Yes. It was good. Watch it. Enjoy it.
I think even though
I'm not going to.
Did you watch Full House when you were younger?
I did. And then my wife watched all of it in a day while I was at Winter Beer Fest. And then I passed out on the couch during like the sixth or seventh episode. And I woke up during the last one. And then I wanted to throw up. Probably partly from the alcohol, but also with how bad it was.
That is actually when I did watch it, was when I was hungover the whole next day from Winter Beer Fest. So that took my whole day up.
Spoiler.
All right, enough about
Fuller House.
Yeah, want to talk about Winter Wonderland that we have going on now?
Oh my gosh, this beautiful April fucking snow that we got.
Mm-hmm. Gotta hate Michigan.
Really though, it's perfect for the book that we're reviewing because books,
plural,
one title, four books. Klaus from Boom Studios, by Grant Morrison, who everybody loves. Right?
He does everything.
Some of these writers, I don't know when they sleep. Do they sleep?
They don't sleep.
He's got, and it's illustrated by Dan Mora. I'm pretty sure that he did the colors too, which the art in this is fucking amazing. I can't even.
You literally can't
I can't even.
You just went sorority girl?
I can't even. It's so good.
It made you sorority girl.
It is so good. Everything. The colors and it all.
The story.
The story's good, yes. The story is very good. The art is awesome.
Well, here's a big thing to first go off. Yes, that is how you spell Klaus, but I almost want to feel like they pronounce it Klaus because it would seem fitting if this is the story of Santa Claus, not Santa Claus.
Well, if it's German, it could be Sinterklaus.
Yes.
And I believe it is German, yes?
But they don't call it, they do say Santa within there.
Yeah.
With the Yultonisi spirit or something, which means Santa.
Yeah.
But other than that, we can call him Klaus for now. I mean, I still feel that maybe your mispronunciation.
I'm going to go with Klaus because it starts with a K. And they change it to a C when they call him Santa Claus. So I'm going to go
Santa
with
Klaus.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because his actual.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what it could be very well, Ben Klaus, and then that's close enough to Klaus.
Right. Because his actual name is Klaus.
Although he does run with wolves, so it would have been kind of cool if his name was Claus. C-L-A-W-S.
So this is the origin story of Santa Claus.
And it is a very... At first I was kind of like pissed. I'm like, I'm not liking this town of like fucking evil.
Yeah.
Like straight up, there is this little boy named Jonas who I want to fucking... I will be happy if he dies by the end of this book. No redeeming quality.
Here's the thing. Okay, so this is the son of the guy who is ruling this town. And I don't...
He's the Baron now.
Yeah. And he's the kid. Jonas is a spoiled fucking brat. 100%. Just completely... Like, you want to push him out a window.
Yeah.
Spoiled.
Kind of like your son?
No, my son is spoiled, but he's not a brat. And I don't want to push him out a window. So I'm going to skip ahead to talk about him to the fourth issue?
But I do want to say, though, that normally on this show, we like to, because this is what originally was a six-part mini
now it's
series.
Seven.
Now yes. It's seven, which I'm all for that. But normally we always talk about number ones, and this was a book that when it first came out, I'm like, I want to get more into it so we have more to talk about with this series. But we're jumping in the middle here where... The fourth book really pulls a lot. Like, it's probably the best so far that, listeners, you just need to go pick up these to finish
right.
When the rest of them come out. It is an amazing
It
series.
Is. And the 1-3 really, the story is amazing throughout, but the 1-3 really builds so that when you get to that fourth book, I mean, the fourth book just hits you in just so many different ways because you get to learn way more about what's going on
mm-hmm.
in history of this town, history of Klaus, and the wife of the mm-hmm. Baron. She's got a weird name. I don't remember what it was. I didn't like saying it, so I forgot it. And the little boy, Jonas, who is the son of the Baron, the big-ass brat. And all the town folk who are being forced to mine coal for the Baron. And until they hit their quota, Yule has been canceled. They can't have Christmas.
Well, that's not the only reason why they can't have Christmas, though.
Oh, little kids aren't allowed to have toys.
Yeah, only Jonas can. Yeah.
That's some bullshit.
And he hates all toys.
That kid's just a dick.
No, he's just a spoiled brat yeah. that...
Yeah. So what I want to say about him, though, and I don't, this might be skipping too far ahead, because, I mean, there's really not anything to say about this kid except that he is a huge fucking brat. But in the fourth issue, when his mother, like, starts playing with him, mm-hmm. with the toys, like, you can literally see a change in him, where it goes from him being this spoiled, power-hungry brat to, like, actually turning into, like, a kid, like, doing kid things, like, playing mm-hmm. and using his imagination.
Because it's magic.
Right. And then his fucking dad comes and smacks it right out of his hand. You see it. You see the little glimmer of hope for this poor little evil brat. And then his dad comes and ruins it all. It made me very sad.
What about the history of Magnus, the dad, and Klaus?
So, I feel like we have to talk about the whole history of it to even get to his history.
Okay.
So, Klaus is found in the middle of the snow.
They're living in like a place that's like always winter.
Right. His mother was frozen to death, holding her baby, and the baby was still alive, which is weird. But... So they bring it back, and he gets raised.
Well,
and
is it like weird, or is he not magical, protected by the winter spirits?
Yes, it's weird, still.
Well, I do want to say, also, like, the artwork, amazing. I love when the spirits come and how just very colorful, because it's very muted tones, even with the snow. It's kind of dark and just grisly-type looking, but when the spirits come, which also, I'm like... Are they spirits or secret aliens sent from above?
Or is he having a drug trip?
Because it looks really... Well, it's got to be some sort of magic, because we talked about magic herbs. So there is a bit of a magic in this world.
Right.
But not, like, just prevalent of him being able to, like, twinkle his nose and go down chimneys.
Right.
But somehow he can be drugged out, make some fucking toys, or the spirits can, which was also amazing.
So, yeah, because in the first... Was it the very first issue? He goes into this town, and he gets super upset by the kids getting... Well, the one kid... There's a kid that's playing with a rock.
Yeah.
And he gets the rock taken away from him because they're not allowed to have toys.
That was a little bit like, holy shit, you're going a little too far on making this really tyrant town. But then when you meet Magnus, you're kind of being like, oh, I guess I can see the evil brooding, you know, Baron guy.
So Klaus gets upset. He leaves. He takes this medicinal soup to help him heal because he gets the shit beat out of him. Mm-hmm. And then he sees all these pretty colors and spirits and kind of passes out and wakes up. And there's just a shit ton of toys that he had whittled in the night for these children.
Sweet, sweet acid trip right there.
Yeah. And very, very, you know, effective in terms of getting stuff done, apparently.
Well, they're
speed acid.
Yeah.
I like the progression, though, of, okay, first then, it's even of, because this has all happened around Yule time, which is the big thing, even the workers, they're chipping away at the mine, which has a little bit more to do than just getting coal. It seemed as they, all they want is, like, a day off to working. Mm-hmm. They're being worked to death. But then, you know, the bells ringing is one of the small things of, like, that only means that it's time for work, not for joy.
Right.
That the ruin of joy was put on, you know, different places. And when they talk about, like, you know, decorating the trees, it's all stuff that we all know and love about Christmas. But him being, like, you know, the first Santa, the spirit of Christmas, having him create the toys and then dropping them off. And then when he was captured and, like, they're trying to find him, and they're like, we're going to watch every which way, you know, at every doorstop. He's sitting on a roof. He goes, I wonder if there's another way to get the presents to the children. And then you just see all these smokestacks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the idea of coming down the chimney happened.
Right.
And I'm like, that was so cool. And then it was even children who... writing a list and putting it in, then they burn it
on a piece of paper.
So it goes out at the chimney, which is where he kind of then looked. But then that's supposed to carry the wish to the Northern Lights where the Yuletide spirits stay.
Right.
And from there, you know, he gets your wishes halfway burnt up, but, you know, the air current's lifting. And it's like, that's really kind of cool how these traditions started. And, I mean, I don't know how...
Factual.
Well, no, all this is real. You know Santa Claus is real. But if these even... Because I know there's the legend of St. Nick, and there actually was historically a St. Nicholas.
Right.
Who also is then turned into Santa Claus and everything. Whether some of these are true parts of the mythology, or if it was just made up for this book, I'm not sure and didn't research enough. But I'm totally cool if they're just made up. But I'd love it even more if these were some of the old myths that they actually did do.
Which I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like Grant Morrison probably pulled from actual stuff in order to write this thing. So, Magnus, the evil Baron, when he's a kid, I guess not even a kid, so he grows up in the same town as Klaus, and... develops a hatred of him. It was like one of those awesome kids, not awesome kids hatreds, you know?
The jealous. The heinous, hate us because they ain't us.
Yeah, exactly. And he ends up, I don't know how spoilery we want to get in this, but he ends up framing Klaus, essentially, for...
Yeah, pretty much kills the old Baron. So Dagmar, Lady Dagmar, then...
That's her name.
You find out... that she chose Magnus, but then she chose Magnus because she thought that Klaus was the killer because he set it up. And so terrible, like, you know, the twisting, brooding of this thing. But there's something even a little bit different because, as we said, the magic at work, there's things going on here, and that there is a deeper evil that Magnus is working for, which is part of the reason why it's not that they're working overtime to chip out the coal. It's that they're chipping out this evil.
Right.
They're trying to get something out of there. And have any of you guys played Chrono Trigger?
No.
Yes.
Okay. So, we have Magnus, who, and I'm forgetting all the names in there, but there was, what was one of the main bad guys' name? It was it Magnus within Chrono Trigger?
Magnus was
Or is Magus?
It was Magus.
Yeah, Magus. So, close enough, because this guy reminds me of Magus from Chrono Trigger. And this evil entity, which looked kind of like a round orb or something, reminded me of Lavos, but they're chipping away to get him out. Yes, I know it's far-fetched or anything, but I'm just, like, looking at, and then you have this girl, and then this guy, and I'm almost, like, looking for a giant frog to show up and, like, join the crew and go back in time. But, no, there's some not very similarities, but I was starting to, like, see, like, some of the art style almost felt like it was from there, and whether that was just subconscious or not.
Right.
Or if you always think when you have a person named Magnus or Magus, you know, that has a little bit of some powers, they look very gaunt in the face, and I want to have, like, a jolly evil person to really set you off, like, almost make, like a Santa Claus-looking guy, but, like, he just, like...
He's evil.
Yeah, just evil, like, chops people's heads off with whatever, like, oh, dear!
So, what if this evil is the Krampus?
Ooh. I didn't think about that. I was just thinking it's just evil. It's something that wants to destroy.
Yeah.
But that...
That would... I feel like that would tie really well.
Seems like a Grant Morrison thing to do.
Right? I think so. It would be really interesting if that's the route it took. I'm going to be happy with this. This book was amazing. Good suggestion, Tony. It was really good.
I can't wait for...
You would think... I mean, you've heard the Santa Claus origin over and over and over again. You obsessed over Santa Claus when you were a kid. All this stuff. And when you get older, it becomes like a lesser part of your holidays. But this really, like... It really gets into the heart of the Christmas time spirit.
Well, there was another book that we reviewed a while ago, which kind of just stopped, which was Krampus.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more of a fun type of... And there's, like, a many different St. Nicks, and there's a totally different St. Nick world. I almost feel like I like this one because it's more... I like the less magical, like the Game of Thrones type, where there's magic... And there's a lot of death, but then it's just more intrigue and plot and backstabbing and everything. So
right.
Love this.
It was good. So everyone pick it up. It's from Boom. 1-4 is out. I think 4 came out last week.
Yep.
It's just so good. And now there's 7 instead of 6.
Huzzah!
I love it when books extend their runs. That's how you know it's good.
So.
Banana pancakes.
Banana pancakes. You want to talk about banana pancakes?
I love banana pancakes, but no, let's not.
I want to go back to the, not really Batman versus Superman, but kind of, because Warner Brothers, at first it was a rumor, but Warner Brothers announced this week that they are ordering reshoots for Suicide Squad, which comes out in August?
Yeah. Apparently it's very expensive, too.
Yeah.
What, to reshoot?
To do reshoots.
Yeah.
They have to rebuild sets that they've already torn down.
Have everyone come back.
Right.
And...
So... The speculation is that they're doing this to add more humor.
Why?
To the movie, because A, Batman vs. Superman had zero humor in it. Maybe 2 lines.
I think I chuckled
but
once.
Yeah. Batman. Movie. I shouldn't
Shit.
Be funny.
Nice shoes. Yeah. That's still my favorite. I don't know why. And
wait, that line that was in the trailer of the great Bruce Wayne versus Clark Kent. Battling each other, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that had nothing... I don't even know why he said that. It was in the movie. It was very, like, forced.
Everything in that movie was very forced. But.
So the other reason is because of Deadpool being hilarious and making so much money. So the idea is that they're going to go through and add funnier stuff because apparently...
Suicide Squad wasn't
the
funny.
Only funny stuff that you see in that movie...
Is in the trailer.
Is in the trailer. And that's it. So they've already given away all of their
humor. Well, I was looking forward
points.
To it being more nitty-gritty. And I... Like, Harley Quinn, yes, kind of funny sometimes.
Right.
But how are you going to already have a plot to insert random jokes that will then go into the next scene? It just seems... DC does not.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers not
well,
know what they're doing.
From what I understand, this happens a lot in movies where reshoots are ordered. The reason why is, I think, what gets me. And I think it's because they sold themselves as a funny movie with that last trailer.
Yes.
The Queen trailer. It looks like it's going to be hilarious. And if that's all that's in it that's funny, people are going to go into it thinking it's going to be hilarious, and then it's not.
Kind of like Ghostbusters?
Kind of like Ghostbusters.
that's what, but people shouldn't be making stuff that it is not. And
the thing is we know who about Suicide Squad, and people who read comic books know about Suicide Squad. But anybody who's going to see that movie who doesn't know what Suicide Squad is are going to think they're going to see a funny movie.
They really shouldn't have shot that trailer then.
Exactly.
And that's just their part for, we're trying, because a trailer is to sell the movie.
Right.
Sell it in a way that seems interesting.
And appropriate to the subject matter, yes.
Yeah, and that definitely, I mean, it was a cool trailer, but I also think, though, even for us that watched it, knew that it wasn't, I thought it set the tone to be just kind of awesome all around. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be a funny movie.
Right.
But yes, they did pick out some, if that's what they think the whole movie is, though, it's just terrible. So to add
more funniness to it, to make up for the
bad
trailer that they, well, it was a good trailer. It made me excited to see the movie.
But it's, but everyone's comparison doing the, you know, which I do hope, though, that Ryan Reynolds and everyone that made Deadpool is still saying, fuck you guys for not listening to us 10 years before when they've been trying to get it. Because they are totally justified in their vision and their way that they wanted that movie to be done. But it still does not make any sort of sense for anyone else to do it. Speaking of kind of part of Suicide Squad, I still have a hard time with some of the people that are on within it.
Okay.
Because, not even within it, but with, I guess this doesn't even have to do with Suicide Squad because they were all bad guys at the time. I have a hard time with the new Harley Quinn book because she's supposed to be a Deadpool mercenary good person.
Right.
When you guys may not have, I remember reading this and I just saw it brought up in a discussion of Suicide Squad and everything. Way back in Detective Comics number, 53 or something of that. It was, and for, at the time, it was like, a holy shit, I can't believe you did this. Joker and Harley gave Game Boys and stuff out. Oh, it was like Detective Comics number 23. Gave Game Boys out to all these children for free. Oh my gosh, we finally got the new Nintendo, you know, and they're playing it. Until the next scene, you see them talking on a roof and all the explosions go off.
Oh, yeah.
She killed hundreds of thousands of children, yet now we're marketing her as lovey-dovey, like, I have a pet beaver type person.
Well, they reformed her.
Yes.
After she broke up with Joker.
They totally, this is, her origin in this movie is 100% New 52 Harley Quinn, and not her origin from Batman the Animated Series. Not even, because in that one, she just, Joker breaks her mind, you know?
This one, he throws her in the vat.
Yeah.
But then it still goes against, like, the type of person that they are within the movie universes. Even though they are separate universes, at least Marvel's doing close enough job to what they are within the comic books.
Right.
And anyone that goes and starts looking for old Harley stuff, like, they're going to be like, wow.
Look at this costume.
Like, even, that's one of the things. It's one of the things, even, like, you know, people are bringing up Deadpool as being just the same. And there's a scene that they posted of some X-Force people giving Deadpool shit. And he goes, hey, at least I've never killed the child. So that's even setting it up of, like, yeah, Harley's killed children. And
yeah, she's done a lot of bad stuff in her past. But they did try and reform her.
New 52 Harley Quinn is way different than old crazy Harley Quinn.
I think it seems like with a lot of the female villains, especially in DC, they like Poison Ivy. I mean, she's still a villain, but like soft. She's got like a soft side.
She and Harley are like secret lesbian lovers.
So it seems like they're trying to take it in this way so that girls need hardcore villains too, I think is what I'm trying to say right now.
You always need to redeem the bad guy.
Well, right. And that's what I feel like they're trying to push female readership by turning these villains into like kind of more relatable characters so that girls will buy more books. But I think they're underestimating their female readers. We want fucking badass villains too. Well, we don't need to, everything doesn't need to have a soft side, I guess. You
and
know,
that's where I take a gripe with And here's my kind of biases coming out, though, of it happens more and more, I feel, in DC, mm-hmm. of the redeemingness compared to Marvel, just like, they're evil megalomaniacs.
Right.
I'm Wolverine, and I know that I shouldn't just put this person on the raft in prison. I'm going to actually kill them and rip out their heart.
Right.
Because I'm a little more real, not the lovey-dovey Superman, everyone can be redeemed type person.
Right.
Even Batman, I don't think thinks they're redeemable, but he just keeps locking the same people up.
Yeah, unless you're in the Batman in the movie, then you just shoot him.
But you have, like, Jason Todd, who is Red Hood, who...
Right.
Then became redeemable, and then eventually became Batman, who then the old Robin, you know, Tim Drake, got stabbed by Jason back in the day, but, oh, now I'll be your Robin, because we'll forget about that.
Manipulated by the Joker.
Yes, old and new 52 and all that, but it still goes to the point of how convoluted their world is.
Lex Luthor is the perfect example, because he's been the mainstay villain in their universe for forever, and just recently, he's part of the Justice League, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I actually enjoy that one because it was well written, and it came from the Forever Evil series and how he learned of the identities and then of Batman and Superman. That one seemed a little bit more... Well, and because he's more or less focused on destroying Superman. He's not trying to destroy buildings or kill children.
He just wants to rule the world.
Yeah.
It was kind of going back to being Lex Luthor again anyways with Darkseid War, because he's now God of Apocalypse.
But he seemed like a person, not anyone, that was a little bit at least redeemable because he's not a murderer. I guess that's a big difference for me.
Right.
Murderer compared to, I'm going to like embezzle money from banks evil. You know, it was a little bit different. I don't know.
I gotcha.
That's my little
thing. All right,
then.
Speaking of females in comics, we have Faith number one in its fifth run.
That's crazy.
A fifth.
It also makes me question how many issues Valiant puts out in a run. It's like, oh, we made seven.
I still think, I highly doubt it was seven.
No, I will say it was very popular when we were at C2E2 for selling.
Valiant was very popular in general at C2E2. They were rocking that con hard. Which, whether it's Faith or not, I think it's awesome for them that they're so high up there now. Like, they were definitely, you know, we got Marvel, DC, Image, boom. Then maybe Valiant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the hierarchy there. And they're definitely...
This is a very subjective hierarchy by us,
yes.
By the way.
This is the one I just pulled out of my head, so don't quote me or tell anybody that I said that. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely pushing up. And I think the fact that they're building just their own intricate world, probably.
Well, and you can't also, for printing-wise, too, because they kind of know ahead of time what comic book retail stores will be ordering, in which case they know... So I think it's part of the testament to comic book stores to start doing their due diligence and kind of realizing Valiant's a place that you can actually order a few more so that they don't need to go through reprintings. I mean, it doesn't matter either way. It's a win-win for Valiant to have to print more.
Comic
book stores realize they need it more. But you're seeing now people like this book and they want to get back into it because obviously issue 2 already came out and has 3 already, I think.
I believe so.
Yeah. So those obviously had a bigger print runs, but people that want to read them all, that's why they're going back to be like, oh, what is this about? I missed number one.
Right.
Let's go get it. That's great for them.
Well, yeah, and it shows people are still going to comic book stores, which is nice.
Huzzah! Support your local people.
You should. You should. Definitely. Just make sure you remember to put stuff on your pull list.
I have befriended Don at the new comic book store.
Yeah.
Yes, he used to be my wife's coworker. He's the nicest guy in the world.
I went into Comic Signal.
Yep.
Yes, on Plainfield. New comic book store that just opened here in our area. And it was very well put together, very neat and clean. It was nice.
I will say, I know you went in there a few weeks ago. They have really upped their back stock of stuff. They have over 3,000 old issues now.
Oh, nice. Okay.
The shelves that were bare are starting to fill up.
So all right.
They're getting there.
So, guys, go check it out. It's on Plainfield.
Then 5 Mile in Grand Rapids.
We move on to Booze in a Book. Hit a little nostalgia here. So.
Do keep going. I want to hear a rendition of that song. Oh my god, that's gonna sound terrible in the ear, but
yes, it's gonna be awesome. So I picked up X-Men 92 number 1 this week. So this directly came out of Battle World. It was so popular during that whole thing.
It was very popular during Secret Wars.
So they decided to do an actual run of it. The art style is a little bit different than it was during Secret Wars.
It looks more like the show.
It does look a little bit more like the show now. And it's just, it really, I mean, I can't say enough about how this 100% just takes you back to watching this
fucking
show. I love
the whole Cold War aspect of it again. Like, it's all back. You're just like, oh shit, Omega Red, I remember him.
Yes, Omega Red. Oh my god, it's just, I can't even.
You literally can't even again.
It's the second time, I can't even. This is one of my favorite shows from the 90s. For sure. I own all of them on DVD. When I worked at the video store, this was the only thing that ever played on the TV there. It was great.
That is the most... I literally can't even right now.
So I'm not going to get into the plot. It's X-Men 92, so it doesn't really matter because this plot will last a couple issues and then they'll move on to the next episode. So, but when you read this, you should definitely go nostalgic and... try and find, if you can, a Zima.
Seems like the ultimate 90s beverage. And, love a Zima.
And rock this book with a couple Zimas. Maybe 20, because I think that's what you need to get any sort of buzz from a Zima.
And just remember, it tastes like drinking bathwater.
It does.
No one actually liked a Zima.
Hint from my teenage days. Jolly Ranchers and Zima definitely increases the flavor factor. So, yes, everybody go pick this up if you want just a little warm and fuzzy from your childhood. Or even if, I guess this wasn't part of your childhood, it's still fucking good.
Sweet.
So.
All right. Well, final thought for this week, or just any other day in the year. April Fool's Day is over, so everything you read on the internet has to be true now.
Thanks, Donald Trump.
Oh, stay thirsty, you guys.